Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we'll be talking with novelist T. Geronimo Johnson, author of Hold It Till It Hurts, and Madeline Herlong, whose new young adult novel is called Buddy. New Orleans native T. Geronimo Johnson has one of those perfect pedigrees for writers. He even has the perfect memorable name. He's a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop, he's been a Stegner Fellow at Stanford, and now he teaches writing at the University of California at Berkeley. His first novel, Hold It Till It Hurts, is the story of an Afghanistan war veteran, Achilles Conroy, who comes to New Orleans to search for his runaway brother. It's an amazing novel about war, about Hurricane Katrina and our ravaged city, and about what it is that makes us who we are. Welcome to The Reading Life, Nemo.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, you were born here. I know that. We love New Orleans native writers. But we'd like to know a little bit more about your roots in the city and your family here.
Well, my entire mother's half of the family is from New Orleans. Her maiden name was English, and so that's a rather large family. And actually, it also includes some Thomases as well. I don't know how many overall we have, but many cousins, uncles, and aunts are still there. And so I think that New Orleans has always felt more of a home to me than any other city, probably because it's where I have and know the most relatives. There's no other place in the country where I'm related to as many people.
And I should say you're a Warren Easton grad, and you have such a large family in the city that I think, 27 of your relatives suffered really serious losses during Hurricane Katrina?
27, we stopped counting at 27. My mother and I were making a list, and it was at 27 that it was no longer helpful to continue tallying the damage.
Oh, wow. And even though much of Hold It Till It Hurts deals with Katrina, you had already written a lot of it before the storm. So kind of set the stage for us about the writing of this book and what it's about.
Well, I already had a draft of the novel, and I already had the character of Inez and Achilles and the basic through line. And it was more of a novella than a novel, and it was part of a series of seven novellas that take place in the southeast between Atlanta and New Orleans. And when the storm hit, that completely derailed the writing because it didn't feel as though it would be possible to continue writing a narrative that's set in the city and not deal with the storm. But there were couple of challenges because, you know, I was worried about using the storm as a mere plot device. I wouldn't want to do that. And also, there's actually a bit of an unspoken bias against writing literary fiction that's too topical. However, even though I did put the project aside for a couple months, it felt to me impossible not to include the storm in the narrative. I'd watched the event unfolding with my cousin, and as we discussed a moment ago, it had directly affected my family. And but the bottom line was that I felt it would have been actually immoral and irresponsible of me as a writer and as a human who likes to write somewhat realist and socially engaged fiction to attempt to continue and turn a blind eye to what had happened in the city.
So tell us a little bit about the plot of the book and how it goes through Katrina.
The initial provocation for Achilles' journey is that he and his brother, they're both adopted. They're two African-American males who are not blood relatives, and they're both adopted by a white family in Maryland. And as young men, they go off to fight in Afghanistan in Operation Enduring Freedom. And upon their return, they discover that their father has died, their adoptive father, and the mother presents them each with their adoption paperwork in a large blue envelope, hence the blue envelopes on the cover of the novel. One brother, Troy, who's younger, decides he wants to meet his biological family, and the older brother, Achilles, does not. He feels as though it would be sort of betraying the family that actually did raise him. after Troy goes off to meet his biological family, he vanishes, and no one hears from him for quite some time. And so when the novel starts, Achilles has essentially decided he has to find out what has happened to his brother who's missing. And this is the journey that he goes on. It takes him from rural Maryland to our inner city, Atlanta, and then down to New Orleans. And he ends up being in New Orleans during the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. He bounces around a little bit, in between Atlanta and New Orleans. But in terms of the scope and the feel of the book, what becomes of probably the most critical interest for him as a veteran is that when he's in New Orleans during the aftermath of the storm, he finds himself uncomfortably aware of the similarities between the devastation in this city that he now thinks of in some ways as his own and what he had witnessed in Afghanistan in the war zone. And so these two experiences and sort of mirroring each other in a way and informing what was, for me, one of the central questions of the book, which is how do any of us learn to care about people who are unlike us?
Right. And there's that fundamental obligation of brother caring for brother from the very beginning. I mean, that was his sense during the war that he had to bring his brother home safely.
Right. And that has been his motivation all along. And part of that, of course, ties to some of the insecurity surrounding his place in the family as an adopted child who feels as though the second child to come into the home is his father's favorite. And so then the only way for him to, you know, sort of experience that aura that Troy has as the favorite is to step in and to play the role of protector.
Now, one of the things about this book that's so interesting is that yours is not a stereotypical New Orleans in fiction by any means. Thank you. So tell me about how you chose the parts of the city you wanted to write about.
You know, that's hard because after the storm hit, I found that I was writing about the city a little bit differently. And I ended up having sections that were sort of love letters and sections that were lamentations because there's so much damage. And I think that what I wanted to do was capture more of a feeling, this sort of feeling of the spirit and the beauty of the city, because without that, then we wouldn't mourn as much when this devastation arrives at the end of the novel. And I knew I couldn't get in the entire city effectively, so I tried to get sort of representative snapshots of different elements. So Uptown has to be in there, and the Treme has to be in there, and St. Augustine has to be in there because of its relevance not only to New Orleans and African American history, but also just the question of religion. And this is a question that's so important in New Orleans, or at least it was in my family. I remember being taught to cross myself every time I passed a church. And so I looked for those areas that people would know, like the French Quarter or Uptown, because this is, of course, before Treme, the HBO show, came out. But I also wanted to look at some of the areas that people might not see as much in fiction or on the news. And so hence we have the Treme and some of the not as celebrated districts of the city.
And after the storm, I'm curious, did you find yourself in that position many of us found ourselves in of explaining New Orleans to people?
I did. I did not explain too much because sometimes I was simply too frustrated by the comments I was hearing to engage them. I heard a lot of people sort of blame those who were stranded for being stranded, and that kind of thing angers me. So when people were blaming the victim, I would generally not engage them directly because it was still really too fresh for me. But people were more curious or open and they wanted to understand why people had remained behind. Then it was easier to talk about it because I could explain this is a city with tremendous resilience. It's a city that's weathered so many storms, literally and metaphorically. And it's typical for people to try to weather these hurricanes out. And we had done that the entire time I'd lived there. My mom worked for the RTA when I was in high school. And when a storm came, she was actually called into work. And my sister and I would accompany my mom to work. And we would ride the storm out on the upper level of an office building and never thought anything of it.
Wow. Oh, well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is that you have this amazing, almost old school kind of writer's resume, which I love. And what have all those things contributed to your life as a writer? I mean, more recently, you've been a yoga practitioner and you're certified as a yoga instructor and you're a rally driver, but you've done lots of other things. How have those all filtered through to your writing?
I think that in my writing, one of the things that's most important to me is trying to treat every character with compassion. I'm always trying to sort of assume the point of view of people who may not agree with me. I know a minute ago that I wasn't engaging people who were blaming those who were stranded in the city, but I think that my writing experiences are very much informed by my work experiences because I've had the opportunity to work in white-collar offices and also digging ditches beside homeless day laborers. And the experience that it has given me, I think, has made me a richer person because it makes me less likely to judge people, which is something my mother always drilled into me, to accept everyone on the basis of who they are and not what they are or how much money they make or what they do for a living. But also, working all of these different jobs has taught me that as much as I want to believe in the American dream, because the fact is that there are a lot of people in this country and throughout the world overall who work very hard and actually make not too much in return. There are lots of people for whom the correlation between hard work and financial reward is tenuous at best. And I try to keep that in mind, especially in this political climate. And I think that that awareness has definitely helped me as a writer to think more broadly about how I represent different people in my work, people from different classes and different races and different cultures.
It's like that old saying, be one of those on whom nothing is wasted.
Oh. Right.
Well, you can meet T. Geronimo Johnson when he signs Hold It Till It Hurts, Thursday, September 20th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Nemo, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely to speak with you.
Madeline Herlong, who publishes her books as M.H. Herlong, grew up in a small town in South Carolina. She's been an English teacher, a sailor, a lawyer, and a law professor. Her first novel, The Great Wide Sea, was named one of Young Adult Library Service Association's top 10 best books for 2010. Her new novel, Buddy, grows out of her experience as a New Orleanian living through Hurricane Katrina, and it is wonderful. Welcome to The Reading Life, Madeline.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, I read this interesting thing about you, that you actually wrote your first novel as a college assignment. When you were at the College of William and Mary.
I did. It was very exciting. I walked into class on the first day, and our professor, who was Stephen Marlowe, said he had one assignment for the year, and that one assignment was to write a novel. And so we did.
Everybody? Everybody did?
As far as I know, everybody did. I know I did.
And what happened to that novel?
Well, that novel was actually sent to an agent in New York and made some rounds, but didn't ultimately sell. However, I learned an incredible amount doing it, and I treasure the experience.
And now you're one of those lawyers turned novelists, but no legal thrillers for you. It's young adult fiction. Why did this particular genre call you?
Well, I would have to say, being a lawyer, I had to be very careful about my language, that it's not the genre that called me so much as the stories that I could tell. So maybe that answers your question in the same way. I'm very interested in young people because I have four of them in my house.
All boys.
All boys, yes. And there came to be a time, particularly as my older one was growing up, that I felt that there wasn't literature for him to move into. And so I thought, well, I'll just write some.
Way to go. And The Great Wide Sea, you had such an incredible reaction to that. It was a wonderful
debut novel.
Thank you.
And that drew on your experience sailing.
Indeed. My husband and I had lived in Florida for a time, and we had sailed from Florida to the Bahamas and in the Virgin Islands. And in fact, when we first married, we had this idea that that's what we were going to do with our lives, that we were going to live on a boat and sail around. But, you know, things change. But that dream was always there. And as a family, we always enjoyed sailing, and that became the Great Wide Sea.
So now you've moved from that to Katrina and Buddy. Describe the plot of this book for us a bit, would you?
Well, put very simply, it's about a little boy who's, he wouldn't want to be called a little boy.
No.
It's about a young man, Lil T, who wants a dog more than anything, but whose family can't afford one. And he gets a dog in an odd way, and loves the dog very much, but then Katrina comes along, and like so many families in New Orleans, his family thought, oh, we're just going for 2 days. The car is very small. There's really not enough room for the dog. We'll leave the dog in the house with plenty of food, plenty of water. We'll be back in 2 days. Well, as we all know, it didn't quite work out that way. And so Lil T has to suffer through Katrina and his own recovery at the same time that he's looking for his dog.
And as someone whose cat has never forgiven her for leaving them, I really get this. Totally get this. Lil T is a remarkable young man. He works so hard to get what he wants.
He does, and he likes to make a plan. Mm-hmm. He makes a plan, and he has this idea that he can actually affect his life. And I like that about him, that he's sort of a spunky guy. And if I make up my mind, if I take the steps, I can have an effect on the world. I can make my life be what I want it to be. And he has to get everybody lined up to do that. And sometimes that's hard.
And it's not just, I want a dog. I want this dog.
I want this dog. Yes.
Now, one of the great things, you have a wonderful website with lots of information about hurricanes and Katrina and New Orleans. But also, you have this terrific trailer for this novel. Tell us about that, the making of that incredible trailer.
I am so proud of that trailer on so many levels. The first reason that I'm proud of it is because the filmmaker for it is my son, who is a rising junior at New York University's School of Film, Tisch School of Film. And so he filmed it for me, did all the editing, the sound, and that sort of thing. But perhaps most remarkable of all is the young man who voiced Lil T for us. He is a local young actor whose name is Keyshawn White, and I found him because I was looking for somebody, and I saw an advertisement in the paper for a little local production that was going to be done, and I said, I'm going to go watch it, and I did, and there was Keyshawn, and afterwards I went up to him, and I said, would you do this for me? And he was totally into it. He thought it was great. And he did a fabulous job. We just convened at my house one Sunday afternoon, and he read the part, and we talked about it, and he was just perfect.
Oh, he is. Yeah. I mean, don't you wish he could do an audiobook for you?
I do. I really wish he could.
But it's fabulous. I mean, the music's fabulous. It sets the tone for this book so perfectly.
Thank you.
So everybody, watch that trailer. It's really something special. What were the challenges for you in writing a children's book about Katrina?
When you write about Katrina, when a person writes about Katrina, it's very easy to focus on all the negatives. It was a very traumatic experience for everyone involved. And in my mind, that means everybody in New Orleans and everybody on the Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I wanted to do as I wrote about Katrina for young people was to acknowledge and describe some of the extremely painful and devastating things that happened, but at the same time to make clear that life goes on, and life goes on in better ways sometimes, that we grow from those kinds of experiences. So the challenge to me was to make sure I walked that balance. A second thing that I wanted to do as I wrote this book that was a challenge about Katrina was to tell the truth. I think it's very important that people who experience Katrina write about it, because it's a very, very complex experience. And I find sometimes when I read what other people have written that I don't feel that it's really true. And I don't mean that they're being dishonest. I think that in some ways you had to experience that dislocation that lasted for quite some time, even when you came home, mm-hmm. in order to really understand how that could affect people, and particularly young people. At the time of Katrina, I had three sons who were at home. One was a rising senior, one was a rising eighth grader, and one was a rising fourth grader. And everybody knows what I mean when I say rising, because school had just begun.
Right.
And I could watch how it affected each one of them in such different ways. And I felt that the experience of that needs to be told.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I could do it.
And why do you think we need these books?
Katrina's not the only disaster that's ever going to happen in the world. There have been numerous ones since then. There are fires, there are tornadoes, there are floods, there are more hurricanes. Young people have these experiences all the time. And even as I want to record historically, in a sense, what happened during Katrina, I also want to reach out to all the young people in the world who may experience similar things and speak to them in their loss and in hopefully and then in their new lives that they're going to be developing.
And one of the things I love about this book is that you show what is possible for a young person. You show the power they can exert over their own lives, and you show that incredible determination to rebuild. That is true, I think, for all New Orleanians now, don't you think?
I think so. And I think as New Orleanians, we can speak very strongly to the fact that we felt that in New Orleans, that we wanted to come home and we were determined to come home and we wanted to build our lives back to the extent that we could. My guess is that if you go to Joplin, where all the tornadoes were, that you're going to see a lot of the same energy and the same determination. So I don't think we're totally unique in that, but it was sure great to be part of it.
I know. Nothing better than Allie. Oh, and you're going to read a little bit for us now, aren't you? Okay,
yes.
That'd be great.
What I'm going to read is actually not the very first words. I'm going to skip a couple of the introductory paragraphs, but I'm going to begin with Lil T's voice. Actually, the whole story is told in Lil T's voice. Mm-hmm. So, my name is Tyrone Elijah Roberts, just like my daddy and Grandpa T before him. Everybody calls Daddy T Jr. Everybody calls me Lil T. So this story starts up in the car. We're on our way to church. It's hot in the car and we're crowded. Daddy's driving and Mama's sitting in the front seat fanning herself. I'm squeezed in between them and looking at my Game Boy. I'm about to make it to the next level. My little sister's in the back playing the fool with the baby. She's shaking these big old plastic keys in front of his face and saying, "Grab 'em! Come on, baby Terrell, you can do it!" And Grandpa T's sitting beside the baby seat, leaning back with his mouth open like he's sleeping, but he ain't sleeping. He's gone someplace he goes when he don't like where he is. "We need a bigger car, T Jr.," Mama says. Daddy don't say nothing. Lil T's almost 13 years old. Pretty soon his feet are going to be sticking out the front window. Daddy still don't say nothing. "And when Tanya and Terrell both get bigger, it's going to be way too crowded in this old car." "I already said," Daddy starts up, "we'll go looking when I get that increase at work. It don't help to bring it up now." Mama casts her eye at Daddy, then she sighs. "It's just so hot," she says, "and it's only April." Daddy nods, and I miss my shot, and it's game over. We're riding by the tomato man. It's too early for good tomatoes, but he's out there selling other stuff just like he does every Sunday morning. "What's he got for sale today?" Mama says. Daddy leans forward a little bit and says, "Sign says collard greens." "I don't want any collard greens," Mama says. And then all of a sudden, Daddy slams on the brakes and Mama screams and I'm bending forward toward the dashboard. Mama's arm slams into my chest and those plastic keys come flying over the seat and smack the back of my head. And the baby starts crying and Grandpa T sits up straight and says something I can't write down in this story. Then the whole world's still. We're sitting in the hot car and the baby's crying and Mama finally says, "What was that, T Jr.?" And Daddy says, "I think I hit a dog."
Oh, that's a real New Orleans scene, isn't it? Oh, We've been talking with the amazing Madeline Herlong, who writes wonderful young adult novels as M.H. Herlong. Check out her website, M.H. Herlong, that's H-E-R-L-O-N-G.com. And you can meet her Saturday, September 22nd at 11:30 at Maple Street Bookshop Uptown. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
Books inspire so many things: great movies, beautiful paintings, and yes, wonderful music. So here's a listen to a song inspired by literature. The Divine Comedy, guess where that name came from, calls roll of great writers for inspiration for their song, The Book Lovers. Listen for Herman Melville saying, "Ahoy there."
Leo Tolstoy.
Yes!
On a play de Balzac. Charlotte Bronte, Emily Bronte, Anne Bronte, Nikolai Gogol, Gustave Flaubert, William Makepeace Thackeray,
call me William Makepeace Thackeray,
Nathaniel Hawthorne,
the letter A,
Herman Melville,
ahoy there,
Charles Dickens.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Richard Sexton and Randy Harlison sign New Roads and Old Rivers, Louisiana's historic Pointe-Coupee Parish, Thursday, September 20th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Today's guest, T. Geronimo Johnson, signs Hold It Till It Hurts, Thursday, September 20th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Poets Jenna May and Chris Toll are the featured readers in the 17 Poets Literary and Performance Series reading, Thursday, September 20th at 8 p.m. at the Goldmine Saloon. Mystery writer Stuart Wood signs Severe Clear, Friday, September 21st at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Today's guest, Madeline Herlong, signs her young adult novel, Buddy, Saturday, September 22nd at 11:30 at the Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. Rising Tide 7, a conference on the future of New Orleans, takes place Saturday, September 22nd at Xavier University. Keynote speakers are Larry Powell, author of The Accidental City, Improvising New Orleans, and Lola Zarek Eli, Treme, and Smokestack Lightning, who will set the tone for this gathering of bloggers and activists. For more information, check out risingtidenola.com. John Shelton Reed signs Dixie Bohemia, a French Quarter Circle in the 1920s, Saturday, September 22nd at noon at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. Reed also appears at Happy Birthday, Mr. Faulkner, celebrating Faulkner's special day Tuesday, September 25th at 6 p.m. in the house where Faulkner wrote his first novel, Soldier's Pay, in 1925. That's at 624 Pirates Alley. The event is free, but make reservations now by emailing faulkhouse@aol.com. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.